Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Nikki.
I wanted to tell everyone that the inventor of karaoke, Shigeshi Negishi, I probably should
are they Japanese?
The name. I believe so.
Okay, Tokyo, yeah, I thought it was based. A Japanese thing.
It says, I thought so too, but I didn't know anything about the inventor until now, and I did not know that he would still be alive. I would have thought that's
really
an ancient thing. Well, not anymore.
I didn't think anything about that. Like, when you said, the inventor,
either, yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, someone must have invented that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just, yeah.
But I think that it's worthy to talk about on the show for a specific reason, but not only that, but I just love karaoke. Karaoke kind of changed my life. Like, literally, it sounds silly, but I love karaoke so much, and I really suggest to anyone who likes to sing and you're afraid to go do karaoke, just go do it. It will change your life. It like literally changes your brain chemistry to sing in front of a bunch of people when you were before afraid to do it. Now I can do it all the time.
But I feel like you're good at singing, so you might be like biased about that.
Well,
I do not feel that way about doing karaoke.
But I think it's because I enjoy to sing. So like,
yeah,
if someone enjoys to sing and they're bad, no one cares. It's fun. It's all for fun.
Yeah, nobody remembers.
Yeah, I was about to say everybody's drunk anyways. Yeah. So
the first day I ever did it. Okay, no, I did it one other time before that. But the first time I ever did it in front of like a big crowd and stuff was on the St. Patrick's Day. And that was like the best day to do it because everybody was super drunk. I just went with this guy that I had just met, and he invited me to a gay bar.
Oh, that's a good place to do it,
yeah,
too. Yeah, that's fun.
And he told everybody, he's like, we're getting married tomorrow. And the whole place like cheered for us. It was so funny. But anyways, the inventor of karaoke died at 100 years old. And there are some interesting things about his life, including the fact that although he was the first to automate and commercialize the sing-along game, or whatever you'd call it, in 1967, he never patented his creation on purpose. And I think that's really cool of him. Everybody should have... I mean, it's just like, it's one of those things that you should... Anybody could think up and then start just... doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that if someone did patent it, I would kind of think they're a bad person, you know, like just trying to make money off and keep other people away from this amazing thing.
It would be a really hard thing to patent too. Like,
yeah.
How do you stop people from singing in public?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that either, but maybe it was like his specific little machine. He has a picture of a speaker here with some plugs in it and some lights in the front, which is super cute, called the Sparko Box. And also one of my like core memories as a kid was just me and my two friends that were identical twins, and their dad's basement with a machine that sits right in front of you and had several songs on it. Or maybe you could like put in different discs, but we had Hannah Montana and Taylor Swift back when she was good in country. And we would just sing Taylor Swift and we would like take turns, like the three of us.
Yeah. Like a little like karaoke machine.
Yeah. A machine mm-hmm. just for it. That mm-hmm. was
we
so
had one of
fun.
Those too. It was really fun.
I imagine now you can just sing any song. I think the last time I did karaoke, they had like the book mm-hmm. where you had to go pick the song
yeah.
out, and they only had like certain ones, and a lot of the times they didn't have any ones that, you know, I
well,
wanted.
Well, now I think a lot of bars that do karaoke, I think they'll just look it up on like YouTube or something.
Yeah.
You know, you can get like any
anything.
Song karaoke version.
That would be better.
Yeah. The bar I was specifically talking about in San Antonio, it was like they had to have it on, you know, their in really big automated list thing, or, you know, digital list thing. But if you like tip the tranny, you could be like, hey, there's a song I want to sing. It's only, you have to look it up on YouTube, though. Like, it's not going to be on your list. And then just she would do it for you if you tipped her.
No, that's
I mean,
pretty
she was
funny.
A drag queen, I guess, not tranny. That's not the right word. But let's talk about this guy, Shigeshi Negishi. I should have really practiced the name before I got on here. It says it all began with some friendly teasing on a summer morning in 1967. Shigeshi Negishi, then 43 years old, was singing to himself as he walked into the offices of the electronics company he ran in Tokyo. You aren't a very good singer, Mr. Negishi, joked one of his engineers. Give me a break, shot back Negishi, but in the space of that short, almost forgettable exchange came an epiphany. If only they could hear my voice over a backing track. That's so cute. It's just amazing. I just love that he was like, oh no, I can do better, but It's just that it's in the middle of the day. You're not listening to it with the.
That's kind
of
how I feel too. Like when you're singing to the radio, it just hits differently than if you're just singing. You know, it's like we need some background music.
That's why you sound better in the shower.
If you hated exercising and eating healthy, what is the point of living to 100? Right.
And then you can't do anything for yourself either. Those people are, they get Alzheimer's and they can't function and they can't use the bathroom and you know. Mm. So.
And they're on pain meds for something like cancer or something like that.
Yeah, the quality of life. Yeah, I do think like the quality of life is very important it gets to a certain age.
And like even that woman, one accident at that age, and then you are one of those people. You're not going to heal properly.
But you could say that about like any age, right? Like when I worked in the nursing home, there was a woman in her 30s, and then there was another woman, I believe she was like 40. Yeah, so... I forget exactly what their story was.
Just some kind of an accident?
Yeah, and like essentially they, this is like a bad terminology for it, but essentially both of these women were in sort of, well, one of them was in sort of a vegetative state, but you could like still see, you know how they say the eyes is the window to the soul? Like you could tell that she was like conscious and with it.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah, and she was essentially like couldn't move,
trapped
was
in your own
like
body.
Quadriplegic, but like couldn't speak, and like trapped in your own body. And then there was another woman who wasn't quite so bad. I think she was just paraplegic, but still like very, very dependent, like really couldn't speak, couldn't do very much on her own. But she had an iPad and she would do some stuff, but she would constantly try to attempt to end her life. And we would just like find her and she would have like the call light cord like wrapped around her neck. And it was really sad and pathetic because she couldn't like didn't have the strength to kill herself, but was constantly actively trying. And it just feels like so inhumane. It's like, at what point are you going to tell this woman that she has to live this life when she clearly so badly wants to end it? It's cruel. And it was, so, and both of those women were very young, like they were like middle aged.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
That to me is a freedom topic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a bill in the House right now that Dennis Pratt is really trying to get people to support that would let people have, like, if you have a terminal illness or other reasons that to be able to have the freedom to choose to end your life.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If I can't control my own body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, God.
That's insane.
Absolutely. It's a
just
huge
the one thing that you can't say anyone owns but me.
It's a huge autonomy topic because we always talk about autonomy when it comes to things like abortion or vaccines or healthcare medications. Like, you know, you can't experiment on people, right? Like that we've established that that's a huge infringement on someone's bodily autonomy. But the second they want like an easy, humane way of killing themselves. Cause like, let's face it, like most of the routes that you could go from to like kill yourself are not very pleasant. It's like you have like overdosing on medications, shooting yourself, like
hanging yourself.
All of those things are super gruesome and they don't always work.
Right.
If we could just have like a medically implemented way for that is like legal and accessible for people to be able to end their lives. Yeah,
like I wouldn't
you know
want my family
I mean?
To find me hanging or like I just shot myself.
Absolutely.
In the face.
So that's super traumatizing for your loved ones.
Yeah.
Women don't want to leave a mess behind.
Yeah. Or like hurt their own face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you don't want to do that to your loved ones, but also, I don't know. Yeah. It's, I mean, that's a huge topic. And it's crazy how many people aren't in support of that.
I know.
I
right?
get that it hurts other people when you take your life, but you can't make people live their life for other people.
Yeah.
It feels selfish. Like when my grandmother passed away, I was like, I'm so happy for her. Like I knew that she, you know, was kind of suffering and it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I'm like, finally, like, and I think it also has to do with like my spiritual beliefs. So it wasn't, you know, to me, like, death isn't some, like, big scary thing. I'm like, oh, it's just, like, the next phase. Like, it happens to everybody. But, yeah, I don't know. It does feel like if someone is that miserable and, like, physically, like, dying and in pain, like, terminally ill, it feels very selfish to say, like, no, I'd miss you too much.
Or even just a lot of old people if you talk to them, they're just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I've done it. I'm done. I'm tired now. Mm-hmm. I want to be done with this.
I've had so many older people and sick people when, you know, in my time as a nurse, like either in the hospital or nursing home, like look me in the eye and be like, please just kill me.
Yeah.
And it's really, I'm like, ugh, you need to talk to your family about that.
Because the family would probably be like, no, no, Grammy. You know,
we want you to suffer longer so we can come see you once a month.
Yeah, it's gruesome.
Yeah.
Unscreened caller, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was wanting to play a game today.
What kind of game?
If you could ask me a question.
You want me to ask you a question? Okay.
Yeah, let's just try it. Your most difficult question.
Okay, what is consciousness?
Well, that's a good one.
Whoa, that's a great question.
What do you think about it? What would be your guess or your hypothesis?
Well, that could very well be the origin of everything, the consciousness, because we some people believe, I suppose I'm still working it out. Some people believe in God, that he created everything. Well, the consciousness existed before anything and everything. That consciousness existed. And the origin of consciousness is the ultimate paradox. The ultimate paradox is, of course, if God created everything, then who created God? Did he always exist? Did the consciousness always exist or not? Good question.
I love that. I would have to agree that that's about as far as I can get as well. You can't really, it's like a chicken and an egg question, and I love thinking about it. Is that all you had for us, caller?
No. I wanted to ask you guys about the immigration thing. I was talking to some people today, and this girl, she's a young girl. She thought it was perfectly okay for people to come into our country illegally. And I thought, well, these laws were made for a reason. How about this? 500 million, not thousand, 500 million Chinese can come over here. And then a couple of 20 million from this country and 40 million from that country. You know, my point is that there's a limit. Even the dumbest person knows there's a limit. So that's why there's a law. Because apparently the world's got the message. Come on in.
And I think
it's a question of money. You can't pay for all these people. You can't. It's going to be a disaster. And there's no way for me to prove it. We'll just have to watch and see it happen.
At some point, I think the market would not allow, if people were, anyone was allowed to come into the country, I think that the market would not allow, but naturally people wouldn't want to keep coming. If, you know, 40 more million people came, it might become overcrowded. I just don't think that people would keep packing in like sardines. Like, they like their countries too, I think. And the other thing is, if we stopped paying anyone to live in this country, as in stop getting stolen from in the form of taxes and then just redistributing it to other people, then
I agree with the taxation thing. I really think taxation is way out of hand. You know what I heard today? This was outrageous. I heard that there was some movement. I don't remember where. I'll check it out and call you back. But this thing was a new law. I think they were trying to pass a law that would give immunity. Now, policemen have some immunity, of course. You know, when they make arrests and if there's a mistake, well, they're given immunity. And also, you know, doctors in certain situations, a lot of people are given immunity from prosecution because they're just trying to do their job. But guess who wants immunity? Politicians. Politicians. Now, you talk about communists. You know, that's communism 101.
Is
immunity for us, you know.
It seems like so just really close-minded to want to be poor, to want to live in poverty. Like, that is so strange to me. And also to vilify people who are abundant and who, you know what I mean? That should be inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
If I was living in poverty, I would look at someone who started their own business, especially, you know, some of these stories that you hear where people are like self-made. Mm-hmm. That's inspirational. Why would you ever vilify that person for pulling themselves out of poverty and then being successful and being abundant?
Because of the governmental enhancements. That's what the problem is. That's where all of that dislike stems from.
Yeah. But yeah, I think there's a lot of like misconceptions about that too, because I'm even thinking of a specific person who became wildly successful because, you know, she got Instagram famous and then started these courses and started selling stuff. And now she's literally a multimillionaire. And a lot of people will be like, oh, that, like, they look down on her for being successful and being able to do all of these like really awesome things, like buy her own property and start all of these business ventures.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, she's greedy. It's like, is she greedy though? Or is that just their perception of her because they're mad that she's a millionaire and she's not donating all of her money to Gaza or the government or whatever?
It's probably just misplaced anger from like Sam Waltons and, you know, the Jeff Bezoses that are getting the government breaks and protections.
Yeah.
And so everyone they see that's following a path of making their life better and becoming more rich or whatever, that they're just going to place their anger there too, because they're not getting that.
Yeah, it's just like a low IQ.
Yeah.
They also believe that there's not enough. If he gets a lot, that means there's less for me out there. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think like that. In a free market and like real sound money, there would be no cap. We would just be continuously living better and better lives every single generation. That's why I want to live in a society where people want that instead of in a society where people just want to get by and let the government give them their snack food and watch TV and they don't want to ever do better or let their kids do better. And process I've been going down a lot recently. And it really creeps me out to think of like cities that are really, really bad with murder and stuff like that. Like one I think of that's so creepy and gross to think of ever even just visiting is Baltimore. So much murder. And I watched a documentary about this park there. So it's in the middle of the city, but it's like kind of a woodsy area that they made into a quote park. It's so ugly, first of all. It's just like hideous.
I feel like most parks in the middle of the cities are like
Baltimore. It's scary though.
And this is a place that's known for bodies have been often found that were dumped there
in the park.
And it's just like, oh, over like 40 years, 80 bodies have been dumped in this park in the woods.
And it's
and
like,
stuff.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in Keene, New Hampshire.
Right. What is the difference? Why doesn't that happen in Keene, New Hampshire? I just think it's just really important to choose like who you live around. And a huge thing for me is going to be choosing. I don't want to live around people who want to be on welfare. That's why I want to create my own city, not allow welfare to be a part of it. And then you'll just naturally not see homeless people on the side of the road ODing. You'll just naturally not be around people who are low IQ, low motivation, and don't care what happens to them or their children or society at large without welfare.
And I could see like how some people, like especially like lefty type people, could see, like listen to this and be like, oh, that's just cruel. But to me, it's really not. Like, why is it cruel for like you to have standards? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I want to choose who I'm raising my children around and who I'm living around and who I'm associating with. And that's been, you know, a huge thing for me as I'm like trying to like level up my like interpersonal growth. Is like just that exact thing that you're talking about, is like being very careful with who I associate with, like who I do business with.
I think you've done a really great job of that, because when I went to your baby shower the other day, I just kept saying to people like, Nikki is a great gatherer of great people. Like I just liked everyone that was there and everybody was like, yeah, I say the same thing. So I think that you're successfully doing that.
Yeah, it's really important when you have kids too.
Absolutely. And there were some people like recently that I'm like, you know, even just like throughout my pregnancy where I'm like, yes, like you're smoking crack, you're getting cut off. And like best friends, I'm like, well, we're not associating anymore. Like I'm not speaking to you anymore. I'm blocking you. There were these other people where I just didn't feel like were in my best interest. And exactly like I set very hard boundaries, especially with people who are doing drugs, because I'm like, I just don't need that in my space. Like there's nothing beneficial that you are giving to me. And being around people like that is quite literally a liability. So this is an article from Al Jazeera. Censorship is a crucial complement of genocide. This is why, as a genocide continues unabated in Gaza, we all have a responsibility to insert Palestine and Palestinians into every conversation.
Every single one. It would be one thing if they said something like, we have a responsibility to insert it to daily conversation. But every conversation, like, that's so, that you, so like, dramatic. You're asking.
And the worst part is, like, people are, like, actually doing that.
Like, and going to the grocery store, like, how are you today? Oh, I'm fine, but how are the people in Palestine?
Yeah.
That'd be weird.
And it's, like, the, like, shaming people for talking about anything else. It's just,
I've never seen
anything like it. Mm-hmm. It's exceptionally bad. But it's a trendy thing, right? Like, this isn't, I don't know. It's
they're not
the 24-hour news cycle in real life.
It's crazy, but let's get into it. So last month on BBC's flagship news program, Newsnight, author and journalist Howard Eric Jacobson complained that the Britain's public broadcaster had been showing too many images of Palestinian suffering in Gaza. He added that in televising Palestinian suffering in this way, BBC was, quote unquote, taking a side, and that while it was agonizing to see what is happening, there are reasons for it.
That's a little
so that
stupid.
Sounds like he's taking a side.
Yeah, he seems to be insulted that the horror being inflicted upon people is being showed to people, like, hey, that might make them not support my side.
Yeah, that sounds, you're
that's
right.
That's kind of dumb. Mm-hmm.
So, and this was hardly the first expression of this sentiment. A few weeks prior, a discussion was underway on the professional networking platform LinkedIn on whether there were too many Israel/Palestine posts on that site and whether this should be, and whether this should change. Many responded that it should. They wanted people to stop talking about Palestinians being starved, bombed, and buried under the rubble. And I can kind of get both sides of this. Like, yeah, I think obviously what's going on is absolutely awful. But I just don't think talking about it and, like, bombarding people with these, like, really gruesome, triggering images is going to end the war.
Yeah.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, we should, it's misplaced blame. Like, there are people attacking people, like, other people. Like, there are militaries attacking people on the Gaza Strip. I am not doing that.
Right. And that's one thing, that's one reason I just don't go watch the news all the time. Like, my dad, today, I was on the phone with my dad, and he was saying, you really need to start watching Redacted, just this news organization that he likes, because he said that they agree with a lot of stuff I agree with. And that may be true, but I told him, like, listen, I don't watch news.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I
go search for someone I need to, or I naturally run into it in real life or in conversations, but I don't just watch the news. That's a bad thing to do.
I remember absolutely. I remember, this is probably like close to 10 years ago now, but I'm sure it's probably the same. My grandparents, when I would go to visit them, they would watch, like, the local news, like Channel 6, whatever, local news. And it would be like, oh, people got shot in Boston. And you know what I mean? It was just like all of this drama, fear mongering. Yeah, just like very negative, low vibe stuff that was just being spewed at them. And it would, like, I don't know, it was just so awful and uncomfortable. And even sometimes when I'm looking for show prep for the show, it's, if you just go like a mainstream news tab, it's like shootings, murder, blah, 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 blah. And it's like nothing of, like, real substance. I know, it feels like there's very much an agenda to what they're spewing. I'm like, are really this many people getting shot? Because in my communities, I'm not seeing that.
Right.
So.
And it's just like, it sucks and everything, but how is that really news that someone died? You know, like,
yeah, like, why do I need to be bombarded with that? Like, that's just gonna, and I wonder why antidepressant sales are skyrocketed.
I think people are addicted to feeling that negative feeling.
Maybe, yeah. Or, like, same with, like, the drama, like, reality TV and stuff. They're like, living vicariously through these people, but that those that the stress you feel from that is absolutely real, and those cortisol levels have a negative effect on your body.
I had to meditate and like do this thing where I allow myself to feel the feelings and allow myself to feel them leave. Not because I was watching a reality TV show, because I haven't in a long time because of like those exact reasons, but because during the Oscars, Lana Del Rey was so snubbed and then annoyingly brought onto the stage by Taylor Swift, and there was just so much to talk about. And then Taylor Swift also disrespected Celine Dion. She disrespected like two of the best singers in the entire universe at once, and I hate Taylor Swift. I was getting so worked up about this, especially with my friend who also loves Taylor Swift. I had to like detox and stop looking at my phone for like a day.
People every day are being sold into sex trafficking. People are out, like, people are being murdered everywhere. There are different wars going on. I mean, the Middle
Ukraine
East
is still going on.
Yeah, like, and like the Middle East has been never not been at war for like, you know, the entire existence of, you know, humanity.
Yeah, I was honestly shocked. I made friends with a guy from Palestine. He's been here for like 10 years now. Or I said Palestine, I meant to say Pakistan.
Yeah.
When I first moved to New Hampshire. And I was shocked to hear him talking about how, like, when he was a kid, there were multiple times there he was, like, leaving a heavily populated area and a huge bomb went off, like, behind him and his family.
Yeah.
I was like, it was just being bombed? Because I didn't know that there were, you know, like, it wasn't declared as a war. There's just always war going on in a lot of those areas.
It's constant.
Like, you don't hear about it on the news, but, like, people are constantly getting bombed by, like, different sections of Islam, different sections of different Indian religions in the Middle East and in near India. And I guess Pakistan is South Asia, actually. I don't think it's Middle East, but, you know, whatever. Like, all those types of countries.
Yeah, it's, like, right around the same area, yeah.
And Israel, so even, like, Christianity and Judaism and Muslims fighting there. And also in, like, Africa. It's not even about, I don't think it's as much about religion there.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's, like, horrible things are constantly going on, and I just don't think it's productive or beneficial to, like, constantly be depressed about it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, I feel so grateful and so lucky that I have the opportunities that I do. And I think maybe that would be, like, a more positive shift for these people, is, like, shift into, like, instead of, like, the guilt, shift into, like, gratitude. Like, I'm so grateful that I have these opportunities, that I don't live in a war zone.
Yeah.
And that I can just exist, because I just don't think that the guilt that these people feel, it's misplaced too. It's like, I didn't murder anybody. Like, I didn't do anything wrong, so why should I feel guilty? It's the same thing with the, what is the race, the critical race theory? That thing where you're supposed to, like, be
feel
ashamed.
Bad about being white.
Yeah, it's like, why, I didn't do anything to anybody. Like, oh, your ancestors might have had slaves. They might have. Maybe they didn't, but, like, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Why am I being punished for something some guy that I may or may not be related to did, like, 200 years ago? That's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, I would never put, like, my kids through that in public school. That's definitely a big thing that people fight over in, like, the house in New Hampshire, the, like, New Hampshire house. Another thing about it is just, like, the lack of principle. Like, these people aren't against war. They're not, a lot of them are not against war. They just are against the thing that, like we've said, they've been told to be against. And they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't know at all what started this. They aren't going to look into it. And I'm not one of those people who is even like, oh, it's way more complicated than you could possibly know. I think it's pretty freaking simple that people shouldn't kill each other. It's pretty freaking simple. It's just the fact that, like, they probably didn't even know what Palestine was. They had to Google it. And now all of a sudden I'm supposed to believe that this is, like, your number one thing. But the thing is, like, if you don't have a principle in being, you know, like, I am always against murder and war and death and destruction, seems pretty simple. Like, most people probably think they are. Well, are you using the U.S. dollar? What else are you doing to fund war? You know, but using the U.S. dollar literally funds the war machine that the United States uses to go kill people in the Middle East and wherever else, wherever they want to go next. Apparently there's U.S. troops in Taiwan at the border of China right now. I don't know what they're going to do. Hopefully nothing. But I just think that if you don't already have the principles in place, you can just be told to support whatever side.
Yeah, I was having a discussion with somebody on Facebook who was saying, like, we need to, like, talk to our local representatives about ceasefire in Gaza, whatever. And they're like, it's your responsibility. And I'm like, well, it's, like, really not my responsibility. Right. And they're like, well, taxes. And I'm like, well, I mean, but wouldn't the logical thing to be, like, okay, stop using the U.S. dollar, stop paying taxes? Like, those things would do more. Like, that is, like, an action. Like, instead of just, like, saying something, that's, like, a legitimate action to try to stop what is going on. And it's just such a weird stance to be, like, well, it's your responsibility.
I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and it's also, like, okay, I'm going to call a state rep that lives in New Hampshire.
They can't do anything about it.
Wait, what are they going to do?
Right.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
This, according to the Wall Street Journal, Gen Z is America's most disillusioned group as far as voting is concerned. Huh. And I think that's actually a really great and amazing thing. Colin is also on Wednesdays with us sometimes, and he is always claiming that he thinks millennials are the most libertarian group. And I'm not saying that this necessarily equates to being libertarian, but it does seem that they trust the government less than any other generation, according to these studies.
Yeah.
So, and that's honestly, every time Colin says that, I'm like, I really don't see that about your generation. I'm supposed to be the last year of millennial, but I reject that. It's not because I don't like millennials. It just doesn't apply to me. But Gen Z doesn't 100% apply to me either.
I think the whole generation thing is just so dumb. I feel like people like talk about it a lot. You know, and like, okay, yeah, breaking up age groups, like that makes sense to a certain extent. But I feel like sometimes people get a little too into it where they're like, millennials blank.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but like we're talking about millions of people here. It's hard to produce blanket statements. And of course, you know, we can go into the statistics of it and say like, okay, well, this age group is more likely to be this, you know, whatever.
I also think you would just relate more to your generation if you're born smack dab in the middle. But yeah. I can't. I am nothing like a millennial who was born in the 80s.
Right.
And I'm also nothing like a Gen Zer who was born like 2010. Like,
that's the thing. It's too big of an age gap.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I'm a millennial. You're a millennial. Nowhere near each other in age. Like, we didn't grow up with the same experiences.
Yeah, I grew up with the internet.
And me and Bonnie are, what, 2 years apart? And we're in different generations?
Supposedly,
it just doesn't make sense.
You graduated high school before me, and I'm supposedly a millennial, and you're Gen Z.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. It's not because I want to be the younger one either, although that would be nice. The other day, I ran into a group. I keep telling people this story because it was so wholesome and funny and cute. But so there was a man, he opened the elevator, but he was like, you guys all go in, and it was like a soccer team of like 13-year-old girls, and I was the same height as all of them, and I just like kind of camouflaged with them and went ahead, and I said to them when the door shut, I was like, I just like blended in with you guys to get in here, and they were like they're just giggling, and then they're like, we're all sisters, and I was like, really? And they were, like, laughing so hard. They're like, no, I wish. And I was just like, oh, I'm more gullible than 20, 13-year-old girls. I don't know why I completely believed them. I guess I'm too trusting. But I just say that because I was thinking, wow, they're the same height as me. That's all. And they're probably Gen Z. And they probably think I'm a silly boomer.
Yeah, right?
I believed them for that.
They're like, haha.
Yeah, we got the boomer. Anyways, Gen Z is supposedly the most disillusioned group of voters, and I can't think of anything except that being a good thing. The subtitle here says, young adults are more skeptical of government and pessimistic about the future. That part seems a little bad. Being pessimistic about the future doesn't seem like a good thing, but...
It's hard not to be.
It's, yeah, maybe they're smarter because of that. Katie Gaddy? No, sorry, Callie Gaddy was a college senior when the pandemic abruptly upended her life plans. Wait, how the heck was she... How the heck is she Gen Z? I better be considered Gen Z because I was not a high school senior. But then again, I meant to say college senior. But then again, people like go in early and like your friend that was a master's degree or at least bachelor's at 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyways, Callie Gowdy was a college senior when the pandemic abruptly upended her life plans and made her part of a big and deeply unhappy political force that figures to play a huge role in the 2024 election season. Her graduation was postponed, and that's so sad. So she was let go from her college job, and her summer internship got canceled. She spent the final months of school taking online classes from her parents' house. You would think that there's a plan B or a safety net, she said, but there's actually not. Today, Gaddy, 25, works as an office manager in Atlanta, earning less than $35,000 a year. In her spare time, she uploads videos to TikTok, where she's amassed thousands of followers. Now that's at risk of being taken away, too. Yeah, that sucks. They're trying to make China either sell TikTok to the U.S. or they will ban it in the U.S.
Why?
Their whole thing is, oh, well, it's basically owned by China, so China is getting data about American citizens from it. Dave Ridley from New Hampshire. Dave, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Now that's record turnaround. I don't think I was on hold for more than 10 seconds.
Nice. I'm glad.
So I have a concern regarding the setup at the TSA checkpoint in Boston Logan Airport near New Hampshire.
Oh, Bradley Logan, isn't that? Are you mixing or am I mixing things up?
Boston is Logan. Yeah.
Oh, Boston's called Logan. Okay, so the Boston airport, what's wrong with the setup of the TSA there?
Well, this is the one next to the United Terminal. And I've run into this, I guess, two or three times. I fly back to Colorado Springs sometimes. So the way they've got it set up, when you leave the United kiosks, it's not United Terminal, but United kiosks, you wind up walking toward the TSA checkpoint, right? And so they have a little place where people can enter the checkpoint. Oh, but only if they're TSA approved, you know, or what, early check or what, pre-check, whatever they call it.
Pre-check, yeah, something
and,
like that.
Yeah, so no problem. I guess I'll just go into the normal line. Oh, to get to the normal line, you have to walk an eighth of a mile. So you wind up walking all the way around, you walk past the checkpoint, and then you just keep walking, and the checkpoint gets further and further behind you, and eventually, you're allowed to turn around and come back toward the checkpoint. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so is this organized, or I'm trying to think of the word, separated by these little ropes, and they won't let you go under the little ropes kind of thing?
Well, if it had ropes, I would have gone under the ropes.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What it has instead is like an Olympic hurdle you have to jump over.
Wow.
If you want to take the shortcut, right?
That's and terrible.
And there's hardly anyone. There's oftentimes not that many people. And there'll be like, you know, 10 or 20 people in line. But the line is, it's like it's set up for 1,000 people, right? So when you're not dealing with a large number of people, you could just go straight over the checkpoint. Instead, no, go this way. Even if you're using a cane. Even if you're using a wheelchair, go all the way around this thing and then come back, right? So for once, I don't usually do this when I'm traveling, but I went ahead and whipped out a camera and did a bunch of ambush interviews with various TSA people who just happened to be in front of me. And so you can just watch the video and just see for yourself, you know, a little bit about how far the walk is and how they reacted to my questions about it.
So you ask, do they have any like sense of self-responsibility, or are they just saying like, oh, well, it's not on our hands. We didn't set it up, blah, blah, blah.
Well, first of all, to their credit, they didn't threaten me over filming. They didn't respond in a hostile manner to me when I started questioning them. One of the bureaucrats said, that's not our thing. I can't remember if he said it was United's fault or the airport's fault. he said that he said, quote unquote, we don't have a problem. I think they do. I mean, it's inconvenient for me to walk around it. And I've observed it three times now. And, you know, what happens to people who have mobility issues and or people who are late for their flight?
What's even the reason? What would be the reason? Like, just so they can have a longer line? It seems pretty stupid.
The way a lot of airports are set up is just really stupid and it doesn't make sense.
Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my my call. My what's on my mind has to do with what you were talking about prior to the TSA setup here, and that's with the whole COVID and how it kind of affected you know, a couple plans that, you know, young people had.
Yeah.
When they were in school. So yeah. So fortunately, I was done with education many years before this, you know, Fauci, you know, the whole Fauci gate thing started. But I can attest, working in industries, I do seem to see like some sort of like, you know, effects of COVID. Not so much related to this girl's plans, but I want to say like intellectually, from an IQ perspective, it's really bad. It's like it's dipped. A lot of these people seem to, you know, game the system. What does that mean? Basically, they seem to study for the interview, but when you ask them something spontaneous, meaning off, you know, the top of your head, they freeze and they can't critically think.
Wow.
And so critical thinking, right, is like something that, you know, comes to you through trial and error, but eventually if you stick with it, like you get it, and critical thinking applies to everything you do in your life, not just in school. But when this whole Fauci thing started, you know, classes from your parents' house or, you know, wherever, you had access to the internet, what did that introduce? You know, it introduced the high likelihood or possibilities of cheating and whatnot. And so I think, you know, 4 years later, right, which is hard to believe, 4 years after this Fauci gate nonsense, you know, you start to see the effect of these young people that are now, you know, something along the lines of 22, 23, 24, and trying to get into the labor force. And unfortunately for some, you know, they might be able to game the system, but we find out, you know, a couple months later that this person is not who we kind of thought they were.
Is it like possibly like they're using AI to try to do their work? Do you ever find that?
It's a combination, especially now with the boom, right, of the, you know, the open AI and mm-hmm. And so forth. But even before, it was just a matter of, you know, just using the internet and not really using your mind. No, fair game. The real world, you use your mind and the internet. But the skill of critical thinking is, you know, using your own brain.
What kind of industry have you seen this in, if you don't mind saying?
Yeah, so this is in the applied mathematical finance or economics. Now, what does this basically mean? Basically, the job that we do is help clients identify risk in numerous portfolios, and this has to do with, like, you know, likelihood of default and how much they'd be on the hook if suddenly, you know, people started defaulting. And so what we do that requires critical thinking is a lot of stats. And so stats, you know, it's taught, and it comes to you over time. You start to realize what sort of methods, techniques, procedures are appropriate in the area of finance or economics. It should be natural to you. And that's just because the way that the education system used to be, right, you used to get a series of problem sets. The professors used to make these exams very difficult and made you fail, but they curved. But at the end of the day, it's so that you actually learn, you know, these difficult concepts and get a good general idea how to apply them in the real world. Now you know, you still have that system, but now you have, you know, a bunch of tools to kind of, you know, eliminate that critical thinking that used to be required. Not to say that they don't think today, but what I'm saying is, with the access of, you know, the internet introduced in a bunch of exams or hybrid courses, online courses, you know, the revolution of AI, these guys are just pumping in, hey, what do I do here? And sometimes the AI is good, sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes the internet, some random forum is good, sometimes it's not. But it definitely does not beat old school you know, critical thinking, which requires a lot of effort on the individual. And so all this to say, you know, I really do feel that this Fauci gate, as I like to call it, did a lot of things that were really bad, not just to young people, but to people in general.
We also have Creighton in Kentucky on the line. Creighton, what's on your mind?
Oh, I just have to ask Nikki. I totally get the idea that a pack and play shouldn't be used for like more than 15 minutes just to allow the observing parent to do small tasks like load the dishwasher or something.
Yeah.
But what my question is, if you're opposed to them and their practical use, what's your alternative that you're looking at?
Just watch your kid. I'm a big fan of baby wearing. But to each their own, like, I'm not going to be like, it's child abuse to use, like they have those other things where it's kind of like a seat and there's like a bunch of toys.
Those are child
around
abuse.
Around the kid.
That's so bad for your kid's hips.
Yeah. So that's the hip displacement thing.
But
even, I don't know, what are they called? Lori, do you know what
they're called?
I don't know. A bouncer. Baby
chairs.
Bouncers.
Oh,
yeah,
those
it's like a little
are
chair.
Bad for your baby's hips?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, it always seems like they really like it. They're like,
they
jump
do.
Around.
Yeah, they
I mean, they're babies, though, so
yeah.
they really have
like,
cognitive skills yet.
Yeah, they like everything.
I've never heard of that.
But,
everything's bad.
But that's the thing. So, like, even like something like that, if you were to be like, I just really need to entertain my kids somehow, and I just need to load the dishwasher or whatever, like, I don't think it's necessarily like a bad thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't think like the exact way you guys are talking about it's used wouldn't be that, but like hours and hours and like not having to take care of it.
So yeah, exactly. So I think there's responsible use of pretty much anything, like even screen time. Like there could be a responsible use of, you know, short periods of screen time that I don't think would like really, really cognitively damage a kid or whatever. I kind of subscribe to more of a Montessori philosophy when it comes to like parenting. So that's more baby-proofing an area and letting the child have full range of that entire area. So maybe putting them in a room, maybe even utilizing a baby gate to keep them in that safe area. And every single thing in that room, the baby or the toddler or the child can have access to it safely. So that's kind of more my style. So I don't really, and I'm also pretty minimalistic. So I don't want to have to buy the pack and play and the bouncer. And
I just think
there's
that
a lot
is
of
the
stuff.
Most
you know?
Of it like would turn your house so ugly to have like all these rainbow plastic things in it. And the way you're describing it just sounds more like nice on the brain of the babies and the parents. Like it's stressful when you walk into somebody's house and they have all this, baby looking baby crap that's all over the floor.
Yeah.
Doesn't that just stress you out? Like,
yeah,
if it's
I have
just
kids
like,
and it stresses me out.
But my parents had a kid when I was 13 and a kid when I was 16, and that stressed me out. Like the living room always being that like disaster. It would just look so much nicer if kids played with like stuff that's around that makes sense to be played with. Cats do it.
yeah, you could give a cat a hair elastic.
Yeah,
and
they won't
like
play with their toys. They will only play with random things. But
one of my friends, she's very minimalistic with her children. She has some books, a couple of toys, but for the most part, she does not have any like children stuff, like any strictly children stuff. And someone made a comment to her, like, how do you get your kids to play outside? Like, what do your kids do? And she's like, they don't have, like, that's their fun thing. They pick up sticks.
Yeah.
They use their imagination. Right. And, like, those are the toys. They go play with the animals on the farm or whatever. They don't
exactly
have any other option because there is none of those things.
Also, like, how many of these parents asking her don't have other kids for them to play with? Because me and my siblings could do anything together, like, sitting around just being like, what if like a mushroom came in here and he was talking?
Yeah.
Or like going in the backyard and like picking up acorns and then they have cheese in it and then we're playing Cheese Factory.
Yeah.
I don't know
imagination.
What that acorn cheese
is. Yeah, but like imagination, you know?
Yep.
Pretend play. Did that answer your question, Creighton? Did you have more for us?
I have a little bit more. I just want to say that my wife and I, we did the baby wearing thing. I had the baby sling and everything. And I can say from personal experience, there is a limit to how much you can do that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, you definitely don't want. It's easier, I guess, like newborn.
I was gonna say even when they're really little.
But yeah, once they start to get heavy, it's like, oh boy.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, start getting in the way and stuff.
I saw somebody doing it at Liberty Forum, and it was cute because the baby was just like really happy, mm-hmm. Strapped to the baby's mom. I just don't know if it was boy or girl. I really hate saying it talking about babies, but it always comes out of my mouth if I don't know if they're a boy or a girl. And so the baby was strapped to the baby's mom and looked really super happy. But I kept thinking, like, she looks relaxed. And that wasn't a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
How can that possibly not hurt your back? All Liberty Forum. David in New Mexico, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Lots of stuff, Bonnie. Whoa, it's crazy.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Crazy. It's ridiculous crazy.
What's on your mind, actually?
Hey, lots of stuff, Bonnie. Whoa. Crazy.
Well, just name one.
Would you like to try again?
Just name one thing that's on your mind, please.
No, not just one thing. First of all, I got to ask you, did Alu start a snack bar yet?
Hello, snack bar. I think you've said that before, and I don't really. Oh yeah, it's Alu Akbar. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. It's a snack bar. What is Alu Akbar?
Okay, I think that I get your joke. Alu Akbar is a thing that Muslims say, and his name is Alu.
Oh yeah, that might have been it. And to help you out with, he was trying to coach you how to pronounce what is it, Kaya? You just got to do it. You just got to pretend you're a kitty cat, and you got a hairball. And you just do the hairball and then hiya. And then that comes out pretty good.
Reminds me of that Jeff Dunham skit where the undead terrorist is like coaching people on how to pronounce his name. He goes, Phlegm.
I don't know that one. But okay. David, do you have anything really good to talk about?
You were talking about serious things like parenting, and mm-hmm. Helpful to share, I believe. But first of all, I got to say, I heard you just a minute ago. You were talking about zoning, like somebody should complaining about moving into a neighbor or a factory moving in. What were you saying?
I was just thinking that it is silly that people think they own the land all around their house and not just the land that they own. Like, I can't imagine thinking like they shouldn't be allowed to build a factory in my neighborhood because I might hear cars driving by. You have the freedom to move.
Okay, well, I don't agree with you because here, this is a real example, like right now. So like I live out in nature and it's like, other than the plane going over, jet, and they got to stop that. No more jets going over, not over my land, anywhere near the land because it's zoning. But it's like just perfectly quiet, not a sound, except we had these neighbors moved in and I would call them white trash neighbors, except they're black. So they're not white trash neighbors. And what they do in any minute now, they're probably going to fire up their generator because it's off the grid. There's not electricity out here. So they move out off the grid where it's just nothing but nature and it's quiet. And then they think it's okay to, because they don't have electricity because they chose to move off the grid, they think it's okay that when they need electricity, they fire up a generator and everybody within a mile, literally a mile away, you hear this instead of quiet.
What kind of is it?
I mean,
how big of a radius do you think you should be able to control the noise of around your house?
All of it. All the radius.
Why?
Because, I mean, well, first of all, because it's, you know, the concept of rude, right?
That's the thing. Like, I think you should be totally in your right to go talk to these neighbors and try to convince them differently. But ultimately, like, you could leave.
Yeah. So that's all you got to do to get rid of people that you don't like is move into where they are and then do all the things that you know that they hate. And then they have to leave. What do they call that? White flight?
I know.
It just sounds stupid. To handle a dispute.
Yeah. It also seems like it just wouldn't affect. It doesn't feel like it would bother me that much.
I did the mature way. I went out within a couple of days of them moving in. I walked over there and I helped them out with all the stuff that I could see were going to bite them in the rear end. Like their solar panels were going to get, first they were going to get blown off their roof. And then if they're down on the ground, the cows were going to trample them. And so I helped them out with everything that they need so they didn't have to learn the hard way. I spent like over 2 hours over there the first day I went over there showing them all the things that it took me months to figure out so that they wouldn't get burned. And so, you know, great, you know, all happy times. And then a few days later or whatever, they all of a sudden they fire up this generator. So I'm like, oh no. And so I go over there and I can talk, you know, like Nikki said, the mature way, talk nice to him about, you know, hey, this, can you do this, kind of like this. And so they did a little bit, but not nearly enough. And then they did it for a little while and then they slacked off and it got, you know, because, you know, time passes and they probably forgot about it, but I didn't forget about it because how can you forget about it?
So why do they even need the generator? I know this is like kind of like not really important to the story, but yeah. I just need to know why their solar panels don't work.
It is important to the story. I'm glad you asked because that's actually part of my point. When I explain this to different people, including the county, because the county's got noise regulations and stuff like that. But the way that I explain, they don't need the generator. And when we tried to explain that to them, that if they just buy a few more solar panels, they can do everything they're doing with the generator without the generator. But they just won't do it.
Maybe they don't have enough money.
Maybe if it's super important to you and the neighbors for peace and quiet, maybe you guys could buy them the solar panels or you guys could buy them a quiet generator.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.